everyone. Welcome to Extra Blue. I am your host, Elena Sonesson. I am recording to you from Lillehammer, Norway. I just wrapped up the first weekend of period one on the World Cup with the US ski team. I raced on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of this past week in the Classic Sprint, which I was happy about, but was hoping for a little bit more, and I'm ready to build on that. Then I raced in the 10K Classic on Saturday, and it was very much so a medium race for me, really hoping for more there, but was very excited on Sunday to get some skates racing in, and I was able to ski with teammates Sophia Laukley and Julia Kern throughout the 20 kilometers and had the 30th fastest time of day, which landed me my first ever top 30 result on the World Cup, which I was pretty excited about. Now I have traveled with the US ski team to Lillehammer, where we will be racing this weekend in a 10K skate race, a skate sprint, and then a 20K classic mass start. So the fun has just begun, and there is lots on tap for the rest of this season. Really quick, I want to mention that this episode of Extra Blue is sponsored by Gear West Ski and Bike Shop. Gear West has their 8 Days of Deals sale running right now through December 5th. You can use the code 8DAYS to get 20% off a very specific collection of items, including some base layers, all Swix clothing, all craft clothing, wax and tools, specific Salomon boots and Blizz eyewear. There's a great mix of things that you can shop for this winter in anticipation for Christmas and the holiday season. So be sure to head over to Gear West and check out their sale. I will link a direct link to the sailed items in the show notes here. And don't forget to use the code 8DAYS for 20% off those select items at Gear West. In this conversation that I'm sharing with you today, I chatted with Gus Schumacher last week before we raced in Ruka. He shares a little bit about his goals this season and how he wrote them down in his blog, talking about accountability and vulnerability and what he's really prioritizing going into this season. We also chat about the men's team culture on the US ski team, as well as his life growing up in Anchorage, Alaska, and what he's doing with the community there. And then we finish it up talking about Protect Our Winners. Protect Our Winners is an organization that I think every skier is passionate about, as it protects the snow that we need in order to do our sport. But Gus really shares his passion about it and what he's done to be an advocate for the organization. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. Welcome to the podcast, Gus.
Sweet. Yeah, stoked to be here.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. I'm stoked to have you on the podcast. First male, and welcome.
Yeah, what spot in line am I total? How many have you done?
You're the third guest, and okay. I'm honored to have you on the podcast. So thank you for taking the time out of your day. You and I are both in Ruka, Finland right now, getting ready for the first World Cups of the season. How was your workout today?
It was good. I'm 2 in already, 4 p.m. But in the morning I did a little run and then did a time trial at like 2-ish because that's when the race is. And it's always a little weird because towards the fall I start to do some intensity in the afternoon, but we don't do a lot of intensity at 2 p.m. But it's definitely, and that's when I've been like crashing from jet lag. So it's nice to sort of like fight that off and try to get on the level of being ready to fire it too.
Yeah, that's so smart. I feel like it's something that we should all implement a little bit more into our training is the afternoon intensity, because we frequently don't race at 10 a.m. We race at 12 or even like 3 or 4 p.m. on the World Cup. So I feel like that was really smart. Good on you for today.
Yeah, in the U.S., I feel like we race more at like the 11, 12 time frame, which feels like morning because you don't, I don't know, like maybe people would go for a jog or something. But yeah, when it's 2, 2:30, even 3, like that's not even quite the afternoon workout territory. That's just like midday. And there's a few strategies, I think. Yeah. I mean, I've definitely heard of people like even doing intervals in the morning. Because you have a good amount of time. I don't know if that's like necessarily to race faster, but I ran for an hour in the morning, which is like not a ton, but like it's not exactly a shakeout. But it felt fine. So yeah, I don't know. It's definitely something I think can use some development.
Yeah. So how did the time trial go this afternoon then?
It was good. There were some snow machines ripping around and stuff, but I ended up sick for a lot of the like time trials and race efforts this fall. So it was nice to just prove to myself that I can go hard. Training in general has been good. So I feel confident about like where I'm at, but it's nice to push harder. And it was also sweet to have coaches out there filming. Like Kristen just got in and she seemed psyched to be out there in the cold. And Matt was running alongside me. So it was a fun vibe.
Yeah. Nice. Did you, I did a time trial yesterday, actually, and I even grabbed
I saw the bib, yeah. Yeah.
Did you put a bib on today?
I had a training bib on. Yeah. Okay. That helps people move out of the way a little faster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think something that a coach of mine back in college, Bernie Nelson, she once said that a bib gives you superpowers. So as soon as you put the bib on, you have superpowers to go harder, faster. And I totally believe that. So I had to put the bib on yesterday to get into the mindset. But
yeah. And if the bib gives you superpowers, if the bib gives you superpowers, then bib plus people you hate to let beat you is like ultra superpowers.
Yeah.
So I had half of them today.
Yeah, there you go. Well, who were you? Who do you hate to let beat you?
Anyone, I guess. But, you know, I offered the time trial to anyone in the group, and Scott was kind of nibbling for a little bit, so that would have given that to me.
Yeah.
I guess unless I think of them as, like, way faster than me. That could be like, yeah,
then it's
whatever.
Acceptable.
Okay. Yeah. Like, I don't get super pissed when, like, Claybo beats me, but people that I feel like I should maybe beat more.
Okay. Yeah. So no one was out there today, though. It was solo.
Yeah, it was solo.
So you won. Congrats. You won the title.
Yeah, I also lost, but.
Yeah. I faced the same
thing. Ben was making that joke, and then,
I faced the same thing yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, Oleg made that joke, too, and I thought that was funny. He thought it was funny. I was like, yeah, I did win.
Yeah.
Thank you for asking, Oleg.
Just putting it into perspective.
Yeah. For clarification, Oleg is the chief waxer. So when I went into the wax truck afterwards and dropped off my skis, he's from Estonia. Just to paint more of a picture for anyone listening.
Yeah. Thank you.
And he's not exactly the most expressive guy. He's a teddy bear. We all love him, but yeah. When he was kind of like, did you win? I thought that was funny.
He is my tech for period one. So
lucky you. He's a beast.
I know. I'm excited. I know. I am honored and so excited to have him as my tech.
Yeah, but, you should be.
Still getting to know him. So I texted Sophie Caldwell earlier today because I know Oleg's birthday is coming up. So I wanted to ask her what his favorite treats are, and we'll see. I'm hoping I can deliver something that he's
Jaeger.
Excited about. Yeah.
Kevin always gets some Jaeger at duty free. Yeah.
Oh, that's smart. All right. Well, I can talk to Kevin about it later.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so you did your time trial today, and how, after that, how are you kind of feeling going into the races this weekend?
Good. Yeah, this is, I think I've got enough World Cups under my belt that I have an easier time just kind of rolling into these early season ones without too much pressure. Because, you know, 2 years ago when I was starting in Ruka, it was top three biggest races I've ever done. And so it was hard to, like, I mean, I came in, I was like, I need to be fast right now. And some of my time trials at home, like, one of them, I did it with the UAA team, and I got USADA, like, anti-doping tested in the morning, so I missed the actual time trial. But I went after them, and it was warming up, and, like, snow is always hard to compare on. But I ended up, like, losing by 20 seconds to Sigurd, one of the UAA guys, and I was just like, damn, like, if he's beating me by 20 seconds, I'm just gonna, like, I'm not gonna do nothing against him, but, like, I'm gonna do bad on the World Cup. And I was just, like, kind of tweaking, but I definitely just, like, have a little more confidence, and if I feel good, I'll race fine. And even if I don't race fine, it doesn't matter so much because it's still November. I'd obviously love to race fast, but yeah, it's kind of nice to not have as much pressure, I think, as in the past.
Yeah, I feel like the whole idea, I mean, this is my first time on period one, and everything I've heard about period one is that it is just cutthroat, brutal. Everyone, all of the Europeans have to qualify for the period one races in November versus, you know, us Americans, we qualify based off of our results from the previous season. So they are firing on all cylinders in November just to make the World Cup team. And they are, you know, acclimated to the time zone already, and they have maybe been on snow for a little bit longer than us. And so I feel like everything I've heard about period one is that it is just ultra competitive. But I think maybe, I mean, that's the mindset that I'm taking going into this weekend is that I don't need to be my fastest right now. It's a long season. And I think that's kind of what you're saying too, is that these two races this weekend for you aren't the ones that you're peaking for. So you've got
exactly, yeah,
in store.
Yeah. Yeah. Like my first year, I sort of, like I said, fell into that trap and like raced pretty well period one, but then just like slowly sort of dropped off. I think part of that was every weekend I wanted to do well. So I was only training 2/3 as much as I probably should have been. And because I wanted to be in good form, but kind of slowly lost fitness. Tour de Ski was good, but then after that, yeah, like I never gave myself time to sort of retrain and build a base. And like I made world champs, which was awesome, but then I didn't race that well there. And that was just like the kind of thing where no one was like a 25th in Ruka for my first time there was awesome, but no one's going to remember that. And to be able to peak later when it matters and get like a top 20 at world champs would have been bigger. So I don't know. It's learning. And honestly, the end of the story is it's a lot of fun to be over here. And that year was a lot of fun, and this year is already really great. So yeah, it's a good vibe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, talk to that point, I was just actually reading your blog, and you posted one just about a week ago or a few days ago,
yeah,
about your goals and your hopeful plan for the season, which is, you know, you acknowledge in the blog that it's scary to write that out and publish it to the whole world so that they can see what you're hoping to do this year. You know, it's very vulnerable and it's transparent and it holds you accountable for it, but it's definitely a scary thing to do. And so what kind of brought you this year to the decision, like, I'm going to share this and write a blog about it?
Yeah, it actually kind of came from the other direction that I wanted to talk about my plan, I guess, just to like go through the season. Partly because I'm excited to maybe go home after the tour. And I was like, you know what, I may as well just be upfront about my goals because I haven't done that before. And I know that's a a tactic for adhering to goals, I guess, or like, yeah, being accountable for them. And it is a little scary. I was like, damn, a lot of people are going to read this. And, but I think it's cool. And I got some good messages, I guess. And I don't think about it that much, but, yeah, it's fun to really like set them in stone then. And yeah, maybe go back and read that blog later in the year when, or just touch on it a couple more times would be fun. But yeah, other than that, I don't know what else I'd comment on that, but I do kind of appreciate being able to be vulnerable because I think it shows more of who I am than like the Instagram culture where everything's perfect and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so in your blog, you mentioned going home for a little bit in the middle of the season. So ideally, you qualify for the Tour de Ski, and then you would maybe go back to Anchorage before going to Whistler for U23 Championship. So are you excited for that? I mean, you haven't really made it home in the wintertime in a couple of years now. So are you excited? Are you nervous about the travel? How do you feel?
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about it. Especially if I'm racing fast through the tour. And then, yeah, I think if I'm like have a good momentum, or even if I don't, but I still have opportunities to race, going home and seeing my dogs and my family and just skiing on my home trails will be a huge recharge. And the travel is a lot, but there's enough time there that I can like really settle into home. And then also not have to change time too much for Whistler U23s because it's one time zone away. And then also have, you know, 2-ish weeks after Whistler to adjust back to European time if I make world champs. So, yeah, I mean, that plan is one I'm excited about.
Yeah, I feel like it sounds like a pretty sweet plan, both in terms of logistics and the races that you'll be able to be at and hopefully then peak for. You talk about that a lot in your blog, just kind of prioritizing the certain races. So I think that'll be really sweet. I'm excited for you.
Thank you. Yeah, what's your plan for the season?
Who knows?
Yeah, that's tough. That's why it's like, I keep saying like, oh, my ideal plan. You just never really know.
Right.
Even Jesse doesn't know, but yeah. So you're here for period one.
Here for period one. My plan right now is to go back for nationals, no matter how the races go during period one and race in Houghton, Michigan. But you never know. Life could always send you a curveball. So we will see. But I'm excited to be here for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to talk to you about life in Alaska. You are born and raised in Anchorage, right?
Born in Madison, Wisconsin, actually.
What? Which is, you're a fellow Midwesterner.
Yeah. It's a... Oh, my God. I hate when people don't know it because I really am proud of that part. But, yeah, I am a Midwesterner. Most of my family is from Wisconsin. I have some South Dakota too. But yeah, I was born in Madison and moved up to Alaska when I was about 2 weeks old. So truly just born in Madison.
Okay, so do you consider yourself a cheesehead?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, me too. I'm from Minnesota,
But you consider yourself a cheesehead.
Yeah, my mom's from Madison, and we have a cabin in Hayward, Wisconsin. So I feel like my childhood was almost split half and half between Minnesota and Wisconsin. And whenever we would be watching, you know, Sunday football, we were at our cabin, and you can't cheer for the Vikings when you're in Wisconsin, or you'll get kicked out. So
yeah, I was gonna say this
cheer for the Packers.
Yeah, this season you might wanna reclaim some of those Minnesota roots. But
yeah,
you gotta stay strong. Can't abandon them in times of need.
Yeah, right. Okay, so news to me, you're from Madison. And how old were you when you moved to Alaska?
Like 2 weeks. It was like right away.
Oh, okay. So You've spent time in Wisconsin growing up.
Yeah, a little bit, like just visiting family. But we'd go twice a year, probably.
Okay. Nice. So mostly from Alaska. I have no idea, like, what is the difference from Alaska to Ruka, Finland? Like, how many time zones are we away? How long did it take you to travel here? I feel like we're in the same type of world, but a lifetime away.
Yeah, it's 11 time zones and took like about 30 hours to travel here, which is pretty brutal. You definitely pay for that for a few days. But I really like it here. It's not totally like Anchorage. It's more maritime there, not quite as Arctic and cold, but I do really like the light, and the trees are similar. Humid actually is probably part of it. Winter humid is pretty different for a lot of places.
Yeah, it is wild being here in Ruka and seeing, there's only maybe half an inch of natural snow on the ground, but it is just frozen to everything. So the trees look like they're from a snow globe. I was just talking to my mom this afternoon and I was telling her about it and I was describing it as like the little Christmas trees that you set up, little ornaments that have like pretend powdered snow on it, and they look so fake. But that's what the trees look like here.
Yeah, it's so cool.
It's kind of bizarre. So it's just like the humidity is freezing that snow right to the trees, and
Yeah, it's
it
really
does look
pretty.
really cool. Yeah. So travel was long here, 30 hours, but maybe is it like the same number of hours of daylight as Anchorage?
It's about like Anchorage at its darkest. So
Oh, okay.
it's farther north here, but this is
Oh,
about how
gotcha.
Anchorage gets in a month.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, hopefully by January, I guess it'll be when you go back to Anchorage. Hopefully it's starting to get a little lighter by that point.
Yeah, it'll be pretty dark in January.
Yeah.
But it's kind of nice. I haven't been home in January in a couple years now, so looking forward to
Yeah, that'll be fun. Well, so the reverse of the short little winter days, in the summer you've got hours and hours of daylight. Do you sleep at all? Or what do you do with the daylight?
Yeah, you gotta be. I mean, I train a lot, so I try to be a very good sleeper, and it is tough. You gotta be strict on yourself sometimes. Because most people are like, oh, it's just 10. Because you really can just fall into that trap. And a lot of, I don't know, most people just generally sleep less in the summer and sleep more in the winter. But yeah, you gotta be checking the clock for sure.
Yeah.
The body clock doesn't work quite as well.
Do you have to like take melatonin or anything at night to make yourself go to sleep, or are you pretty good at like once your head hits the pillow, you're out?
Yeah, I don't really. I mean, as long as I'm pretty good about going to bed at a similar time, which this year I like made a conscious effort to be 10 to 7 every day, and that worked really well.
Nice. Well, so also this summer, you came out to Stratton, Vermont, and hung out with the SMS team. So, what did you think? How did it compare to training in Alaska? And would you ever do it again? Would you stay longer, go for less time? Let's hear it.
Yeah, Stratton's sweet. I mean, I'm definitely an Alaska kid, I think. I haven't really had a ton of pull, like not a ton of feelings that I should leave, but I think it would be fun. I like visiting places, and when it works with training and I can make a good block out of it, I think it's cool. I think it's tough a little bit with like Stratton not being at altitude. Like it doesn't necessarily, it's good to have a different group And I love the group there, but there's not a lot of like things that it's providing necessarily that Alaska doesn't have.
Right, it's not
That's
the
not to say it's
altitude.
bad at all. It's just like not that much different even.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's hard to justify all that travel, which from Anchorage to Stratton, which is Stratton is very hard to get to. It's a lot of travel. And if you're doing that to just get sea level roller ski training in, which you can do at home, it is hard to justify. But I feel like we had a really fun crew out there this summer, and it was fun to kind of get everyone all together for a couple of those weeks and train.
Yeah, it was really fun. Had a great time.
So do you try to only plan, spring, summer, fall travel around what makes sense with a productive training camp in terms of, either altitude or on snow?
Pretty much. I guess I've never really been that into on snow, but I do try to avoid, kind of just avoid travel at all costs. Because I feel like I have what I need in Alaska, and traveling is tough to train through. If I feel, and I never like, I don't know, I don't really often feel like I need to get out. So I don't really have like the, man, I just need to leave and get time somewhere else. But I don't know, I do try to visit my family in Wisconsin once in a while, but that sort of gets a little tougher now than it used to be.
Yeah, a lot of other obligations. So I do also want to ask you about your gastravaganza. I don't know if I'm
Oh
saying that
yeah.
right. Gastravaganza, maybe?
I say extravaganza, but you could say it either way, I guess.
Gastravaganza. Can you tell me about it? What inspired it? What was your goal? And how did it go?
So it's a kids' ski camp basically. It was just 2 hours long, like a shorty. But yeah, like mimicking Fast and Female. Because there's not really much of that going on in Alaska right now. Actually, Stratton inspired it a little bit too. Just that it seemed like you guys had a lot of good local youth outreach going on. And it feels like Anchorage hasn't had much local youth outreach since like Keegan retired, at least like outside of the clubs. My goal is to have it like not tied to a club. Just to give anybody an opportunity to learn about skiing and like being active. But yeah, it's kind of tough. I think Fast and Female did a really good job with it, but I found it was tough to like cater to everyone that came. Even I had like 20 kids maybe, but there were some 16-year like my age range was 8 to 16, and there were some 8-year-olds and some 16-year-olds and kind of a lot in between. And so some kids didn't really care about skiing that much, and some cared a lot. But it was also nice because it was small enough that I could be like, what do you guys want to do? And a lot of them wanted to play games. And then I just had like a little projector that I could connect to my phone. So we looked at the pictures, and then I had a bunch of clothes to give away. So it ended up going well. But I think in the future, I might want to like specify more who the camp is catering to, or just expand it with more people to like divide and conquer. But it was a lot of fun. JC came. A lot of UAA people came, and I'm gonna try to do some more next year, like through the summer and stuff too.
That's super cool. So are you envisioning maybe like a series of camps, or would it kind of all be a build up to the Gastravaganza?
I think they would all just be extravaganzas. Maybe as more people get involved, just like having it be an extravaganza. I don't know. Yeah, but I'd like to keep doing them and just not. I think I also got some more offers from like my local moms to help organize, which would be sweet if they like
Nice.
sort of did the organizing and then we showed up and did the camp. Because that was like part of it is I've been talking about it for a while with Luke, but we never got around to it. Probably because of COVID and but partly just like, I don't know, you got to feel like you got to rent a space and insurance ended up being a thing and just all that stuff that were unknowns now I sort of know how to do, so I think it'll be easier to do in the future.
Cool. Very exciting. How do you feel about kind of working with the next generation and working with youth, either if they are, you mentioned some of the people at Gastravaganza weren't necessarily that excited about skiing, but they were there nonetheless. And some of them were super excited about skiing. So, I know that a lot of junior skiers look up to you, but I feel like you're also impacting the general outdoor community, not just like the Anchorage high school ski team. So, how do you kind of
Like by doing
take on
that
that
or just in
role?
general?
By doing that and in general, yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things I try to do in general is be like genuine on social media and stuff. So I realize a lot of people see that, and I, yeah, try to keep it myself. And then also, like, especially when I'm in town or in my community, be trying to be as approachable as possible because I know I'm not that approachable a lot of the time. I think just because I don't know, I'm a little shy, maybe more serious than some people, but. Yeah, I don't want people to feel like I want people to feel like they know me and can and I can give like help people with whatever they would want help with, I guess, in skiing because especially within my community, which is broad, but Anchorage especially, having raised me, I've gotten a lot out of it, and I'd like to be able to not just let that sort of fizzle away, and I can help nurture that and help like younger kids do more because it would be fun to see fast kids come out of Alaska still. We need to win that Alaska Cup again. Like, come on.
If you were talking to a group of maybe like some 14-year-old boys, what would you and they were interesting or they were interested in cross country skiing, but they weren't like totally sure about it yet. What would you tell them?
I don't know. I probably wouldn't like pressure them too much. I kind of would want people to find out they really like it. But I would just point out that I have had a lot of fun with it and I've met all of my best friends in it and had a lot of the best memories of my entire life cross country skiing and gone to some really cool places and just like basically there's a ton of opportunities in it. And you don't, I mean, as long as you train and you're committed and you like training, I think that's a big part of it too. It's tough if you don't have that work ethic, but yeah, if you want to do the work and you're excited about it, it's a pretty sweet thing to do. That's
Yeah.
what I would say. I can't, that was not the best answer, not the most concise answer, but
Well, but I
yeah,
feel like
just
what you're
there's
saying is kind of,
opportunities.
yeah, and leading by example rather than trying to pressure someone into anything, which I think is super valuable. When you were first nominated to the national team, which was, sorry, I don't know the stat off the top of my head, but was
I
it
don't even
4 or
really know the
5 years
stat.
ago?
I think it was 5 years ago. But yeah,
Okay.
I forgive you for not knowing.
Well, so what did the team look like at that point? You were skiing with a lot of, hopefully, if they're listening, they aren't offended by this, but I'll say older athletes. Eric
Based on what they're doing
Brunson.
now, yeah, I don't think Eric Bjornstrand's listening.
Yeah.
If he is, he
Eric
can
Brunson.
climb a tree. He's old.
He sold David Norris, Scott Patterson. Like these guys are, they have experience, and you were nominated to the team when you were, I don't know, 17, 18 years old. So, what did you learn from them?
The first year.
When you were kind of, I would term you as more of like a young buck, and they were the
Yeah.
experienced older guys. So.
Yeah, I guess I just hard to say like exactly what I learned from them. But I think just how they carried themselves just like being like professional, but like relaxed about it. Like, you know, they knew how to be professional and they didn't like have to force it. And they weren't that professional. Like, Eric was late all the time and stuff. But it was the kind of thing where, like, they were serious at workouts and, like, knew what they needed to do. Not necessarily, like, serious the whole time. But, yeah, just I think that's the biggest thing is they knew what they needed to do. And that's something that I think no one ever fully figures out. But that should be, like, everyone's goal to figure out what steps they need to take to become their best.
Yeah. Do you feel like, can you use those learnings and become a better leader yourself with that?
Yeah, I think Simi especially was like, I'm thinking about my first year on the World Cup was like, very fatherly and sort of transitioning away from skiing himself. And so he really had a lot of energy for JC and I as younger guys. And yeah, I definitely think more about after that season was over, I sort of realized what he had done in just sticking around, and it helped that Sophie was there. It wasn't all us, but part of the reason he raced that year was to have a year with us where he could show us what to do. And I've been asked what he taught me before that year, and I don't, like, there's, again, it's just, like, just absorb stuff from him that I couldn't even really explain, but part of it thinking now is, like, realizing how powerful that was for me to have someone that was in my corner that was thinking about me more than I realized, and I think maybe I'm not there yet, but I'd like to, once in a while, think about other people more than they think I do, I guess, and try to help in a way that's quiet, but like, provides my teammates a boost.
Yeah. I think there can be a huge impact on, like the silent teaching and the silent learning also. And, I think that, I mean, I have seen over like the last 4 or 5 years, just the team culture that the US men's team has right now, I think is pretty contagious. And it's just, from my perspective, seems very positive. And that those older guys kind of like paved the way and molded the younger crew to kind of learn the ropes, but then take on the responsibility themselves and also just kind of create that positive culture. So how have you seen it kind of evolve over the last few years?
I think they laid the foundation and we improved it. But yeah, that sounds a little like cocky, but it's a little bit true, I think. But they were definitely like a great team. And I think Matt has always tried to work to get them or the guys in general recognition when, you know, he had to work really hard to get the girls team dynamic thing be such a media deal. But yeah, those guys were really good friends and worked well together. But I think our group has the advantage of having been around each other so much growing up at races and camps and everything, that you have to credit, you know, like NNF and Brian Fish for like providing those opportunities for us to get together. Because, you know, my first camp with JC was when we were both 15 in Burlington at the U16 camp. We roomed together because our names are the same, basically. And now we're here and we spent a lot of time around each other, and it's just like, we are us as a group, like we get along together so easily that and we can't take that for granted. It's like, I think about it all the time. Like, it is really special that it's so natural and easy, because then you don't have to think about the basics of like being a roommate with these guys. You can think about your racing and their racing and all the like top levels of the, what's the like pyramid of needs? It's not Pavlov, but it's some dude's got the like hierarchy of needs. And we've got a lot of them covered just by having spent time around each other as kids. And now we're good friends and the basic needs are met already. And we can focus on everything else that we need to be our fastest. And I think that gives us a lot of momentum and just makes living really easy. And I'm really like grateful for that.
Yeah, I think that's really special, and not all teams have that type of culture. So
no.
It's pretty cool to see that. And I would say, I mean, definitely don't take it for granted, but it doesn't seem like you are. So I think that's pretty cool. What do you think that culture was kind of just ingrained because you grew up together, that it evolved that way? Or do you feel like there were certain steps along the way or learning moments along the way that you all kind of faced together and you were like, oh, this is going to grow us or make us closer, build us as a better team?
I don't think we really consciously thought about it that much, but for sure, like going to World Juniors together, that's a challenge that we faced together. And especially those relays, I think starting a race with some pressure or just like, or even like the first one, not really expectations, but all having the same hunger to succeed and then doing it alongside each other and succeeding just like taught us the cause effect relationship of like when we work together and really want something, we can get it.
Yeah. It formed that bond. And then once that bond is there, it's hard to break it.
Yeah. It's just like every time we work together and something good happens, that like drives that deeper.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, I am excited to see all of you guys race this winter. And it's fun because there's a group of you boys that are my brother's age. And so I feel like it's just been really fun to kind of, you know, I was paying extra attention to that year in, you know, at Junior Nationals in Cable, Wisconsin, back in like, I don't know, 2014 or 2015 or something.
Yeah.
And so it's just cool because I feel like I have really watched as everyone has kind of progressed and taken off in their each of your own ski careers. So it's super cool.
Yeah, Anders was fast then.
Yeah.
We were thinking, yeah, I was like, damn, this guy's going to be really going. And not that, I don't know, that's not to say like he did anything wrong, but yeah.
He has been working hard at school and enjoying the college life.
That's great.
While also ski training hard, but yes. Okay, so I have one more topic that I want to talk to you about, and that is protect our winners. So can you explain how are you involved in protect our winners and what does it mean to you?
Yeah, protect our winters is to start as just like a climate. I mean, people probably know that, but it's like a climate change advocacy group that is made up of outdoor people. Kind of started with skiing and has spread. But Jesse sort of got me involved in that. And I guess I've always been into protect our winters. Like as a kid, I asked for the shirts for my birthday and would donate a couple bucks, I guess. But yeah, when Jesse was like just sending emails out to the whole team, like, do they want to be involved? Because they are super receptive to people getting involved. I was like, yeah, totally. Cause that's always been, I've always felt involved. They do a good job of like including the whole outdoor state. But yeah, pretty quickly, like I got on the team and then last spring went to DC as a, like to lobby, with a group of like Olympians and stuff. And that was just like a dream come true as a kid being kind of plugged in and being excited about Protect Our Winters, yeah, going to DC to lobby for climate change was just about the pinnacle of that. And so, yeah, it's pretty grateful for them giving me and other athletes opportunities to help with climate change, because it is a big issue, especially in winter sports, but, you know, even people that don't do sports, it's a big issue. And it makes me feel better to be able to do something about it than, like, I don't know, when I was younger, I was just like, we had some bad winters and it would rain in January in Alaska, and I was just like feeling, I don't know, guilty and full of dread. But doing something through them makes me, even when it's raining now in Alaska, I'm like, oh, I'm not doing everything I can do, but I'm doing something, so I feel a little bit better. But other than the lobbying stuff, yeah. The exact things that I do are not that much. I was commissioned to write a op-ed earlier this year, and the person I was working with for that sort of got busy with other election stuff, with the election coming up in November, so I never ended up getting to do that, but I'm sure I will at some point. I recorded a podcast with Yale Climate Connections, which that came about through Protect Our Winters.
Oh, cool.
And I don't know, I think it's a pretty big, like, it's on a, it's like a radio show, and it's just a 30 okay. second or minute long snippet that gets listened to by a lot of people. So I'm curious to see how that goes. And then also for the election stuff, I wrote about 100 postcards to Nevada voters, because that they identified that as a close race with a lot of people who are into the outdoors. So they found mm-hmm. low propensity voters and had all of us athletes on Protect Our Winters just write a little handwritten postcard like, this is why I'm voting, you should vote too. Mm-hmm. Join us, sort of deal. And then I also phone banked with them just for a couple hours a few days before the election and left a lot of voicemails. Got one person that was like, how do you guys get these numbers? I was like, honestly, I don't know. He was not happy, but he wasn't mad at me, which was nice. He was like, I'm not mad at you. I'm just like, man, I'm getting calls all the time. Cause he was from one of these battleground districts. And he was like, I'm not voting for either of them. I know both of them and they're terrible. I'm like, man, that sucks, man. But yeah, that was cool.
Well, it sounds
but
like
yeah, I haven't really done too much
yeah,
else.
I feel like you say you haven't done a whole lot, but that sounds like quite a bit, and it's way more.
I mean, yeah.
So I think that's pretty great to just see how you're involved in that, and especially when we're in a sport that is so directly impacted by climate change. I mean, the fact that we are in Ruka right now, and there is, like I said earlier, half an inch of natural snow. The rest is all man-made saved snow from last year, or they made it in the last 48 hours. So I know it's still only November, but we're basically in the Arctic Circle. So you'd think that there would be snow here right now.
Yeah. And the other thing I always think about is, sorry to interrupt, but Kusamo / Ruka has been having this World Cup for a long time. Like, I read Pete Vordenberg's book about them starting the World Cup here, and I'd assume it was the same weekend. And I guarantee you they were not making and storing as much snow as they are now. Just to point out that there is natural snow, enough natural snow to ski here in November 30 years ago.
Right.
And I've been here. All the people that have been coming here have said that they've never, or Scott anyway, I talked to Scott and he was like, yeah, I've never skied any of these other trails, just the race trails with thick man-made snow. So it's the kind of thing where people are like, we're still skiing, but it's really it's changing. And I think we're not that far away from the World Cups having to be pushed back.
Yeah. Yeah. It is wild to see that firsthand. And I mean, you're inspiring me to get out and be more involved and advocate for Protect Our Winters or other campaigns. How would you recommend someone be getting more involved in something like that? Where would you direct them?
Yeah, I don't know, because there's not a lot of I'd say like talking to your Protect Our Winters has good resources on talking to your representatives when, like your legislative representatives when things come up in a certain region. Beyond that, honestly, this is part of it, is what I realized as you were talking, is part of the POW alliance of skiers and riders and boarders is just like showing that people care about it. Right. And trying to mobilize the massive outdoor community to vote for people who are going to be climate positive. So a lot of their work comes around election times, because like one of their stats was that like the outdoor industry is, it's whatever, it's a bunch of billions of dollars, but it's bigger than like the pharmaceutical industry. And even like the, like maybe the energy industry, like it is a massive industry. And if you mobilize that, like you will get changes in policy. So I think just talking about it among outdoor circles even is powerful.
Yeah.
And showing that you care. Not like, as we talked, I remember another thing I'm doing is starting a bi-weekly email blast to the Anchorage Nordic Ski Association members that sign on. So we had like a booth at the season kickoff party just saying like, hey, I'm Gus Schumacher and I'm getting help from it from some citizens climate lobby people that are in my club, some like masters, but yeah, so I'm just like sending out a email every couple of weeks to let people know what they can do. But oftentimes it's like, I don't know, there's not like the specific actions that you can do that are like the most reliable are voting and calling / emailing your representatives to point out that you are a constituent in their area that cares about climate policy.
Yeah. Let's talk about it more.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah, that's the thing. I'm always like, I don't really do that much, but it doesn't take like, you don't have to be doing it all the time. It's just like once in a while, like having a targeted, saying something that's targeted. And yeah, like I said, POW has a lot of resources for that. But if you can keep your finger on the pulse in your neighborhood, that's where you can make the most change. Mm-hmm. And if you can talk to like your assembly members about, I don't even like, it's hard to think of examples, I guess, but because I really haven't done it much at home.
Well, I think POW does have a great website that, you know, offers a lot of direction, and it's a great platform to at least get started. And well, it's really cool to see how involved you are in the campaign, and exciting. Hopefully we have some good things in the future around it. But for now, that is kind of the wrap up of the podcast. I do want to ask you one final question. I lied earlier. That wasn't Protect Our Winters wasn't the last topic. Final question is, going into these races in Ruka, it's my first time racing these courses. First time racing period one. What is your advice to me?
That you can't race faster than you can race. Like that was, I was always like just trying to like think of how I can overextend myself, but you can't. You can race 100% of what you can do, but that's it. And so yeah, focus on what you can do and pacing everything right. I guess for Ruka specifically, like there's a lot of work in some places and a lot of like trying to hold the high top speed in other places. So especially in a 10K, I'd say don't necessarily shy away from stomping over the top of those hills. But yeah, you can only do as much as you're capable of, which is to say it could be a lot. And that's like doing the best you can do is something that sounds like a kindergarten policy, but is actually much harder in application. And it's something we're all figuring out, but yeah, you've raced before.
Yeah.
It's not that much different from racing other places.
Well, I will do my best. I hope you do your best. I'm excited for this weekend. And thank you so much for joining me on Extra Blue.
Yeah, excited. Ski podcast is definitely a good thing.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks so much, Gus.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Extra Blue, and thank you, Gus, for joining me today. After the races in Ruka this past weekend, I chatted with Gus one more time to give us a quick recap on what he thought, and he explains that the races were a solid weekend, nothing special, but definitely feeling like he has a lot of room to grow faster as the race shape comes together this season. You can follow along with Gus on his Instagram handle, which is @gus.schumacher, or he also has a blog, gusschumacher.com. I will have both of those links in the show notes of this podcast so you can find them there. In the meantime, I hope you are all enjoying the start of ski season and are having some extra blue days.